Welcome to this week's edition of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. Now, this week's guest comes by way of Area 5. He's a new GM, and he's only starting his second full season of practical shooting, which means we have a lot to discuss. So if you would, join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Skyler Davis.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Dave.
Thanks for being on, Skyler. If you would, take a second and introduce yourself.
Yeah, so thank you. Skyler Davis, I shoot out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Just got into competitive shooting pretty recently. I had a lot of good luck and I've risen through the ranks pretty quickly. Love the sport, love the people, love the process of trying to get better, and I'm happy to be here.
Has anybody ever confused you with Fabio?
No, sir. I've gotten Dave Grohl. I've gotten John.
Okay.
Thankfully, everyone's been very nice with the comparisons. I haven't gotten too much flack.
Okay. Do you know who Fabio is?
Yeah, absolutely. The romance novels guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like that. I could picture you being a model on a romance novel. On the cover of a romance novel with the hair, the perfect beard, the voice. I mean, you've got it all set.
I appreciate that. I forgot the baby oil this morning, but, you know, if we take a break, that could be arranged.
Oh, goodness. All right. Maybe this will be my most listened to episode by women.
I certainly hope so.
All right. All right, Skyler. If you've listened to any episodes, then you know that I'm going to hit you with the hard questions right up front.
Yes, sir.
All right. So that's where we're going to start. Question number one, what's your favorite movie?
Oh, so I'm a huge fan of the show, and I spent quite a bit of time searching my soul for this one. I got to go with Wedding Crashers.
Wow. Okay.
I'm a huge Vince Vaughn guy. That big goofy guy has, a straight sense of humor for my heart. He has me pinned. Anything that I've ever watched with Vince Vaughn in it, I'm rolling laughing.
Get the French out of your mouth.
Yeah. That's everything.
That's one of the greatest lines ever.
Yeah. That movie is, an absolute classic. It's a little long, right? I'll give you that. But, man, 2 hours of just hitters the entire time.
Yeah, I could watch that movie all day, every day. That movie is hilarious.
Absolutely.
All right. I've learned that a lot of people don't read books anymore. If you've read a book or more than one, what is your favorite?
Yeah, that's a darn shame. I definitely do read. I guess I'll start the soapbox early, but man, a lot of the people that I talk to, they say, you know, you have to read serious stuff. And then they, you know, go and brain rot in front of Netflix. So it's one of those where, I read candy sci-fi, just purely entertainment. I also read nonfiction books too, but I'm going to go to bat for, I got two of them, the Expanse series by James S.A. Corey. And you know, I'm not sure if you're a sci-fi reader, Dave, but it's what they call a space opera, meaning it's just, I think like Days of Our Lives, one of those old, like, you know, middle of the day opera situations, and just take it, put it in space. It's just pure entertainment, pure candy. It's nothing crazy from a, you know, a huge literature standpoint.
So easy reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Entertaining. They made an Amazon series about it. And like every, you know, book that's adapted to a series or movie, the series isn't great, but the books are. The second one, you know, in the same vein, Red Rising series, and hopefully, you know, sci-fi fans at home are like, you know, shaking their fists, they're excited about it. But Red Rising series is more on like the young adult side. It's about, you know, folks growing up, getting after it, some of the class warfare, that kind of stuff. And both of those series are like 8 or 9 books long, and they're big, like 600 page books. So it's really awesome for, you know, just going on a journey, and you got months of reading in one of those series.
Did you spend any time in the military?
No.
No. Okay. Well, I'm just asking because I did. And that's where I did. I would say the majority of my reading, because when you're deployed and going on trips here and there, that's what you did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's not in the military. Some people ask about the yes sir and the sir and ma'am. It's just I got family from Texas, so haven't had any military service.
Okay. We're in Texas.
So I was born in Houston. I got family in Houston and in Galveston.
Okay. I was born in Dallas and I lived on the west side of Houston, technically just outside the Harris County limits. I was right on the edge of Katy and Harris County.
I'll tell you what, it's a small world, Dave.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a, man, I don't remember the park now on the west side right there. It's a huge ass park. It has like a 1 mile asphalt trail loop.
Yeah.
And they had the Texas wild game cook-off there.
Whew.
Oh, my. Now, this was back in the day. We're talking 95, 96, 97 time frame.
Yeah.
But my goodness, was that some good. And it was cool because it was basically sponsored and ran by all the different law enforcement agencies within the Republic of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a $5 or $10 entry fee. I forget what it was, but the food was all free and literally anything you could imagine. There was alligator, shark, rattlesnake, anything you could imagine that could be cooked was there.
Yes, sir.
And they had a jail where you could pay to have someone arrested and put in the clink for like 15, 20 minutes, whatever it was, you know, but it all the money went to charity, actually.
That's about as Texas as it gets right there.
Yeah, that was pretty badass. If there's one thing I miss about Texas, it's the food.
Yeah.
Cannot beat it. There was a place we're going on a Texas trend here for a minute.
For sure.
But when I lived down there, I worked on the south side of Houston, not far from the Superdome. Hmm. And there was a small hole in the wall little joint that had, I swear, baked potatoes that barely fit on the plate. They were so big for $5. Again, same time frame, 95 to 97. For $5, they would give you this big-ass baked potato, and then there was like a fixins bar of anything you could imagine that you could put on or in a baked potato, including barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
So you could go buy a $5 baked potato and fill it with barbecue and whatever else you wanted on top, and typically that was two meals.
Yeah, that'll get you right. That'll set your whole day off.
Oh, my goodness. Did you ever go to a super salad?
No, sir. So that's...
No?
I love the reminiscing about Texas. I moved out of Texas by the time I was two or three, so I've been there to visit a bunch of times, but...
Okay.
I don't have any memories. When you were crushing barbecue, I was crawling around, and we were just about to leave, so...
Okay.
I definitely feel the love for Texas, but I don't have the firsthand memories.
Okay. I gotcha. Well, it's kind of like me. I mean, I was born in Dallas, lived there for the first 3 years of my life. And then my dad was in the military. So we ended up being all across the rest of the country. So I have some memories of the Dallas area, but most of my memories are the 2 years I spent down in Houston.
Yeah. So. Same exact thing for me, Dave. My dad was in the military. So we were Houston, Texas, and then Long Beach, California.
Okay. Yeah, we were California, and we were either West Coast or East Coast and traveling in between.
Yep. As you do in the military.
Yeah. Yep. All the constant moving. Okay. Question number three. Favorite superhero, if you have one. If not, favorite historical figure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So not a big superhero guy. I grew up in the heyday of cartoons, that kind of stuff. But I was kind of in between the comic book phase and then we're, you know, making huge movies about superheroes phase. So, you know, I had to go with historical figure. Thankfully, he's still with us getting after it. But I got to go Ronnie Coleman. The guy's an absolute legend. And if you're a meathead in the game, and you're around in the early 2000s, you know exactly what I'm talking about. He won the Mr. Olympia 8 times, Dave. Arnold Schwarzenegger, only 7. What a bum. Ronnie Coleman, 18.
So your GOAT for bodybuilding is Ronnie Coleman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lee Haney, close, right? Ronnie Coleman.
Okay.
Yeah, Ronnie Coleman was getting after it when I was coming up, and we were in the weight room curling in a mirror for 4 or 5 hours at a time. So Ronnie Coleman's a guy.
All right. So give me your top five.
Oh, man, that's tough. So I watched Ronnie and Jay go back and forth. That was kind of like my golden era of bodybuilding. So I got, you know, Ronnie number one, probably Jay Cutler number two, just because, you know, the vitriol, the competition.
I thought Jay Cutler was a Chicago Bears quarterback.
No, he's also a huge bodybuilder. And they
They got to be different guys sharing the same name.
they do look oddly similar, but those two going after it, and then you find out that, you know, obviously as we grow up, like, they were actually pretty good friends, which is awesome. Those two, I probably follow that with like a Arnold and Lou Ferrigno from back in the day. So like Arnold probably number three. I probably go Lou number four. And then I got to pull one, you know, out of the obscurity, to appeal to the bodybuilding fans a little bit, but just Kai Green for a couple, 2-3 years. He was the guy with, you know, he had the mask, he had the crazy, you know, on stage, he did poses that nobody else has done before. And now I'm not sure if he competes anymore or not. But that was big, kind of late 2000s, kind of, he was the dark horse during that time.
Okay. I might be getting the name wrong. So you can correct me. Franco Colombo.
Yeah. Yeah. He was in a Pumping Iron, documentary with, Arnold and Lou and all those guys.
And yeah. Lou. Right. Yeah. He's one of those guys from back in the '70s who's right there at the top. So before Coleman and Lee Haney and all that, because I was beyond it at that point, were Ferrigno, Schwarzenegger, and Colombo.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I might have to correct myself. I think Lee Haney was the one who won 7. I think Arnold only won like 5 Mr. Olympias. Somebody, in a forum somewhere is typing away angrily right now. But.
Right. Yeah. Well, and Arnold won a few, retired, came back in and won again, though.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the big conversation is like, you know, did he really have the best look, or was it because, you know, he had the superstar thing? And, you know, bodybuilding is subjective. So, you know, the judges can be swayed. So, you know, I'm not going to throw my hat in that ring. I love them all, but Ronnie Coleman's top of the heap for me.
So who's considered the strongest of the bodybuilders? Do you know?
For a very long time, it was Ronnie Coleman. He was, you know, he did okay. The 800 pound squat, and now Ronnie Coleman, you know, a bunch of back surgeries, all that kind of stuff. And that was like one of those things gives you chills too. He said, you know, Ronnie, do you have any regrets? And he said, I only took that 800 pound squat for 2, but I had 3 in me. And he's like sitting in a hospital bed and can't walk right after back surgery. And his whole thing is, man, I wish I would have done another one. Guy's just a savage, but yeah, the 800 pound squat, he's, you know, pressing 200 pound dumbbells. And then, you know, the DVDs, he's in the grungy gym down there in Texas getting after it. No AC. You know, it's he's a superhero. That's the only way I can put it.
Okay. Favorite gun and caliber.
Yeah. Yeah. So not a gun guy like a lot of, you know, competitive shooters. I like shooting. Right. But the one gun that, you know, gives me that like giddy feeling when I shoot it, the one gun that, you know, is just stupid fun. I got a Beretta 1301. Semi-auto shotgun. That thing is fast. And man, that thing's a party, right? I like to take the old shot up, you know, pistol practice targets once they're more paster than they are paper. You know, I save those and then you take them out there and you send them off to, you know, Valhalla with, you know, a couple of like 5-6 rounds of, shotgun all at once. And it just shreds. It's, man, just stupid fun. The Beretta 1301, that thing is incredible.
Okay. What about caliber?
Yeah. So, you know, I started reloading, last year, Black Friday, got into the mix, and I got to go 9mm. I'm not sure, you know, not big into the caliber game. You know, I got rifles, pistols, shotguns, all that kind of stuff, but nine mil for me, the versatility, the cost, you know, around 15 cents a round and you can go to town on that thing. But subsonic, supersonic, all kinds of different, and it does what it needs to do. Definitely the one I'm the most familiar with, that's for sure.
Okay. It's the equivalent to the 30 caliber rifle cartridge. So,
yeah, absolutely. Jack of all trades. You can get it to do whatever you need it to do. Now, there might be, you know, boutique rounds that are better, but, you know, just stacking up a bunch of them, going to practice, nine mil.
Yeah, all around, it's a good.
Yeah.
It's a very diverse round. Yeah, it's very good. All right. So you obviously, Ronnie Coleman is someone you looked up to. So I noticed one of the things on your Instagram is that when you made GM, you made a comment that the Ronnie Coleman quotes would still be coming. So Give us a couple Ronnie Coleman quotes.
Man, the classic, just a yeah, buddy from the back of the bay when somebody smacks a run and you get it right at the end of the run where you know the camera's still rolling, you know, so they get to savor it. They get to savor that when they cut up the match video. But just a yeah, buddy from the back of the room. I like a lightweight. A buddy, local guy here, Bruce, comments on all my YouTube videos with, you know, just quick Ronnie Coleman quotes. So if you're trying to look them up a bunch, go check out Bruce's comments on YouTube. But buddy and lightweight are the classic too. When somebody really smokes a stage, they might get an ain't nothing but a peanut from the back of the room. But man, you go watch those Ronnie Coleman DVDs. They're on YouTube now. You can watch them for free. And he's just yelling the whole time in a gym. It's awesome.
So Skyler, you're brand new. Before we started the recording, you said you really started shooting at the end of 2022.
Yep. Got a handful of matches end of 22.
Okay. Your dad was in the military, so you guys traveled around a bunch. Mm-hmm. Did you do much shooting growing up?
No, not so much. We, you know, didn't own guns, that kind of stuff. If we did, I didn't know about it, but, did some country stuff with friends, just going out there, shotgun stuff, some pistol stuff. I think I shot prior to, you know, buying a pistol in 2021, I think I shot a pistol like maybe four or five times my whole life. Just some field stuff, some gravel pit stuff, you know, the real classic, just turning money into noise type stuff.
So how old were you when you bought your first pistol then?
Yeah, so that would have been at the end of, I think that was the end of 2020. Like everyone else, you know, I got into it with, you know, COVID shutdowns, that kind of stuff. I work in a gym, so we had a prolonged period where we weren't coaching and got a little stir crazy. So I'm like, hey, what's outside stuff that we could do? Started looking up, you know, YouTube videos and all of that. And I got into it late 2020, bought my first gun there, and then continued to turn money into noise for a while until I figured out the whole practice thing.
Okay. So what did you purchase what was your first gun purchase?
Yeah. So it was the original, SIG P320 with, like the old grip on there. And then I actually traded that. So I was initially really, really thrown by the idea of a double action, single action. I'm like, two trigger pulls. I can't possibly manage that. Right. So I went with the strike and fire gun and then got that, liked it, you know, I shot it pretty well, but traded that for a CZ P07 after about 6 months or so.
So what are you running now?
Yeah, CZ's all the way. You know, we got the long hair. We're drinking, cold brew coffee. We're riding fixed gear bicycles. You know, it's all the hipster stuff. So CZ's all the way. P09, P01, and then the guns I compete with are Shadow 2s.
Okay. What are you running for optics?
Just SROs. So, you know, people ask about guns and stuff. And again, not a huge gun guy. My thing with the Shadow 2s is just no excuses, right? So I think, you know, the top five guns in, you know, carry optics, which is what I shoot primarily, all work pretty much exactly the same. So my thing was, hey, get one of them, train with it a bunch, get the same optic as everyone else, get the same gun as everyone else. And then if something goes down, I think if you break a Shadow 2 at a match, somebody will throw you a Shadow 2 from the back of the bay. Like you can't spit without hitting a Shadow 2 at a match. So
yeah,
the whole thing was like, let's just go with what everyone's got. And then that's practice. So I don't have any excuses. I don't have any reason to say, oh yeah, let's chase this gear, that gear, all that kind of stuff.
I'm going to change gears for a moment and go back to when you say you're working in a gym, are you a personal trainer?
Yeah, of sorts, right? So we do some one-on-one stuff. We mostly do small group, semi-private training, which is a word salad to mean that we coach 5 to 7 people at a time on kind of semi-custom programs.
Okay. What would you say would be the number one exercise for people in practical shooting?
Yeah, I love it. That's so first of all, just barely along this journey. Everyone's in different spots as far as where they start training and where they're shooting.
Sure.
But you know, it's one of those things that you're never going to see at like health clubs, all that kind of stuff. But I think some kind of sprinting and primarily stopping quickly. I think that part's really missed in practical shooting is the ability to decelerate and, you know, assume a nice solid foundational structure quickly. A lot of ranges are going to be on gravel, that kind of stuff, right? Your top speed is going to be limited by how short the stage is and how, you know, slippery the surface is. But your ability to pound on the brakes and stop and be ready to shoot right away is a super, super big important part of that. So, you know, if you can, sprinting and then decelerating quickly. If you can't do that, a lot of your lateral movement stuff is going to be really good. Your lateral lunges, your lateral squats, those things that a lot of people generally don't train. Most of the time we go to the gym, we're training up and down and we're training forward and backward. Us nerds call that the sagittal plane stuff. But a little bit of sideways stuff helps a huge amount in USPSA. Think back to your stages, 3/4 of them are going to be mostly lateral movement. So your ability to kind of control yourself in that plane is super, super important.
Did you play much football growing
yeah.
up?
Yeah, I played football all the way through high school and stuff, playing in college.
Okay. I feel like I played a lot of running back, wide receiver, and DB. Mm-hmm. And I feel like DB is playing defensive back is very similar to shooting USPSA or practical shooting because it's all about quickly turning your hips, getting moving in different directions, preparing to move in certain directions. You know what I mean? A lot of change of direction, exactly what you're saying, getting up to full speed quick, shutting it down quick, you know, a lot of very quick, explosive movements.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That'd be a good primer. not everyone has the opportunity to be playing defensive back out here, but you can certainly train some of those movements.
The RO does.
That's true. That's RO hitting a perfect back pedal right behind you. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And all of a sudden someone points this way and you shuttle left and shuttle right. Yeah. Oh Lord.
Yeah. That's hilarious. The one differentiating factor is obviously football is reactive, right? So you have to be able to make those decisions on the fly versus, you know, competitive shooting is proactive. We get to make a plan and then execute that plan. So, you know, it's, a little bit easier from a physical demand standpoint, but
yeah,
I mean, I've been working out my whole life and I still go out to matches and get rocked by dudes who don't train at all. So it's not to say that, you know, training is going to bring you from, you know, a B level to like a GM level, right? You got to practice, but at the cutting edge of the sport, I don't know anyone who's, you know, one of those super squad folks who, you know, doesn't at least think about training some. Right? Are they training every day like crazy? Are they CrossFit competitors? No, but every one of them does something physically, at the very least, to stay healthy, to be able to practice more. Even if it doesn't really raise the ceiling on their outputs, it definitely raises the floor and how much work they can do in a given shooting year before they get hurt.
Yeah. And I think there's some other benefits too. I mean, the more physically fit you are, obviously the less exhausted you are at 12 stages, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's little things like that, where if you're B or C class or A class and you're not looking to win a match, okay, no big deal. But if you are G level and you're looking to win matches, majors, and national championships, that's where those little things like that can make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. sustainability. Yeah, we're out here walking 10, 12, 15,000 steps a day in the heat, all of that. It's, you know, especially if your normal life is more sedentary, it can be tough to stay in it. And then I think, you know, you said some of the other folks maybe not trying to win matches, right? Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But I think having fun is a big part of it, too. When you're at the end of the match and your feet hurt and you're not used to walking around and you're just cooked, it's hard to have fun. You know, ultimately, it's a hobby. We're out here getting after it. You know, we want to use something like competitive shooting to kind of fuel you to get better in the other aspects of your life. So if, you know, having fun in competitive shooting is the goal, then maybe doing a little bit of working out, watching what you eat, recovering, that kind of stuff would be a good way to have more fun shooting.
Yeah, absolutely. Just had a thought in my mind and it slipped. It got away from me.
It happens to the best of us, Dave.
Yeah. All of a sudden, as soon as you stopped talking, it went blank. Freep, gone. Okay. Now I remember what it was, because I had an example in mind, and it was at Nationals last year, Carry Optics, where it was the stage where you had the three shooting positions, one in the middle. You started in the middle and you had the one in the back and the one in the front. And I can remember a conversation that was had that someone told me about, where JJ had determined how long it would take him to run from the third to the front position, from the very back to the very front. And he felt he could do that fast enough that it would be worth his time. Instead of shooting from the back, like most people did, he ran to the front and then shoot from up there. And that's where I think that physical training, if you're trying to win a national championship, could come in handy, because you never know when you have a situation like that where, instead of maybe long open targets, they're long partial targets. And now that extra burst gets you there, gets the gun up, gets you shooting, because you're not as tired, you're quicker, and you're able to perform at a higher level.
Yeah, absolutely. More tools in the toolkit. You know, it's people at, you know, super high level we're fighting over 0.5%, 1%, 1.5%. And by we, I don't mean like I'm in the same league as JJ Ricazza whatsoever. But at a certain point, those margins of victory get really, really, really small. Having an extra tool, like instead of standing at the back and pecking at targets, being able to run up there and go to town on those things could be really important. Now, that was one stage out of the 20 at Nationals. So, you know, the naysayers might be, hey, you know, it's not a big deal, but Nationals has been decided by, you know, less than that margin multiple times.
Yeah, for sure. And even if you're not first, you know, like last year, Christian won it with a pretty comfortable lead.
Yeah.
But second and third literally came down to the very last stage. Mm-hmm. So, and there was just, I want to say, less than 10 points separating Nils and Jacob. So, you know, that's still bragging points right there, you know, second and third, and who's able to do what a little bit quicker. So,
yeah,
you never know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. One of the other kind of physical training, interacting with shooting things that I really, really love is, you know, in physical training, you're limited in how much you can do, right? You can't go to the gym for 4 hours. At an hour, hour and 10, hour and a half, you're not really getting any better, right? One of the things I love about competitive shooting is that there's not a big ceiling on it, right? You might get your hands tore up if you do too much dry fire, but there's still other stuff you can do. You can keep practicing this, and there's not really like a ceiling to that, right? So a little tiny bit on the training side, and then a lot on the skill side, the practical side of it. You can get pretty good pretty quick.
So that's a good segue. How did you go from winning B class last June at Nationals to being a GM? What was it? 10 days ago, roughly 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago. First of all, thank you.
You're welcome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So it feels like it's been a long time coming. It's, you know, obviously a blip, right? It's one of those things where, you know, the story makes it sound longer than it is. But Number one, you know, the reason I was B-class for nationals, there's people, again, in forums typing angrily, sandbagger, just like 1,000 times. That was my first 4 classifiers. For those that don't know, you don't get to drop classifiers until you get to 8 in total. And then you drop 2 of them, and the top 6 is your classification.
So, right.
I still have nightmares about this classifier. Someday I need a club to stand it up so I can go back and just hundo the thing and put it to rest. But the 99-13 classifier, where your arms have to be straight overhead, like you're taking a box off a shelf. I was a young shooter. The mental game wasn't there. Definitely the strong hand weak hand skills weren't there at that point. It's one of those where it's 3 strings. You start in a weird position. There's no shoots all over the place. You got a strong hand weak hand. So that thing ate my lunch. I shot like a 45%, right? And I was at the point where, obviously, you can't drop that classifier. So the rest of my classifiers are pretty good. I was, you know, artificially a B-class going into nationals. And I said, hey, look, if that's where I'm at, let's show up and get after it, you know? And then, you know, I had a great time there. Met some great people. The squad energy really helped keep me up that whole time because, you know, at that stage, you don't really know how to manage a match and stuff. So I was kind of all over the place. And you know, I love to tell more of that story with, you know, frosted legs and, you know, optics full of water and all that kind of stuff. But then it's just, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants. Today in this day and age, there's so much information, so much access available to people who are starting to shoot. And I can't imagine back in the day how, you know, you grandfathers, you fathers of the sport did the thing. Cause it's crazy, right? Again, I can 20 seconds on YouTube, I can find world-class material. The hardest part now is filtering what's good and what's not good. Right.
But it's there. Yeah.
It's absolutely there. Right. And you know, huge credit to my instructors and, you know, squad mates and stuff, but it's just a lot of practice. And then being willing to, you know, kind of drop the ego and attack stuff that you're not good at. That's really it. You know, there's no magic formula, anything like that. It's just practice a lot, and don't only practice the stuff you like, practice the stuff you need to improve on. I was pretty lucky in that I pulled good classifiers, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's one of those where you got to be prepared, and then you got to be a little bit lucky, and let's go shooting, you know?
Okay. So there's a lot to unpack there, Skyler.
Sure.
So I want to back all the way up to where you said you were artificially B class. Without the 99-13 classifier, where would you have been classified?
Yeah, I think it would have been like middle of A class when I look back at the percentages. And then,
okay.
Yeah. So to be clear, and you know, somewhere people that took the Steve Anderson class with me are just yelling and stuff. I was not artificially B class from a competitor standpoint, from my ability to manage, you know, how I felt about stages and stuff. I was most definitely B class. I might've been C or D class. From a shooting skill standpoint, I was probably a little bit better than that.
Okay. But that was your very first classifier.
That was my like third, I think it was my third or fourth classifier.
Okay. How long had you been shooting before you got classified?
Yeah. So I shot a handful of matches in 22. I think I shot like 6 or 8 matches or something like that. And just didn't have a membership because I wasn't sure if, you know, something I'd like and want to continue with and whatnot. And then, it's hard to find matches early in the season in Michigan. So, I shot, you know, all the classifiers I could get my hands on. And then by the time we got to nationals in June, I still only had 5 classifiers, I think. So it was one of those where I hadn't dropped any yet.
So when did you start in 2023? Mm-hmm. When did your season start? Like, when did you first start shooting matches in 2023?
Yeah, March.
Okay. So you had 3 months, mm-hmm. really, was it, between the start of the season and CO Nats.
Yep. And
okay.
Our state sectional match was in there too, in like the middle of April, which was it was tough. Middle of April in Michigan is a real toss up.
Okay. Hit or miss on the weather.
Yeah.
I'm getting the feeling that your mental image is that your shooting skills were better. So you, as you said, middle A class is where you would put yourself without that 99-13 classifier. But if you just started, what experience did you have before practical shooting that allowed your skills to be higher than the average person coming into practical shooting?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's speculation on my part. I'm not, an expert on people developing as shooters, right? But just on my journey, I think being athletic helps a little bit. I think, to be honest with you, playing some first-person shooter video games helps a little bit. And then just having the practice availability to kind of slightly make my own schedule at work and being able to practice a little bit more.
2022, you said you shot a handful of matches at the end of the year.
Yep.
But you were unsure of going forward. So at what point did you go, okay, this is, I'm going to go ahead and do this?
Yeah, so that was probably September, October that year. In Michigan, you know, we really only shoot from March to October. And the March and the October matches are iffy, right? So that was probably September, October. That was probably after 5-6 matches, that kind of stuff. And it's one of those, you know, kind of proving it to yourself, seeing the exponential increase, the newbie gains, as we call it in the gym world, where, you know, you practice anything and you're going to get better at shooting through your first handful of matches. And, you know, just really getting hooked on getting better at those things, you know, feeling like, you know, the work is putting out results. And then, dude, the energy on squads, the energy with the local guys getting after it is awesome. Everyone wants to see you succeed. Everyone wants to see you get better. Everyone's happy to see you going out for burgers and beers and stuff afterwards. Getting hooked on the social aspect of it was kind of like the fuel. And then getting hooked on the development aspect of it was kind of like, you know, looking at the path and saying, hey, you know, if I continue to practice hard and continue to get after these things and knock down, you know, skills that I'm not as good at, I can keep this exponential growth going for longer. And I think, especially as you start shooting, like that's kind of the goal, right? We're all going to be pretty exponential when you start shooting, but fighting off that plateau is a huge, huge part of it. So, love hanging out with the boys, love getting after it, love shooting matches, having a great time, and also love to practice and see the results. So it was kind of later in that season where I'm like, you know what, I'm going to dial down this winter. I'm going to, you know, buy some books and I'm going to practice hard because next season we're getting after it.
Okay. More to unpack. Holy cow. You are just so many different drawers that I got to open up here. Hey. Okay. You touched on something that I don't think is talked about enough. You said the social aspect. Yeah. And I know we all go to the matches because one, it's fun shooting, and two, we get to hang out with folks that we enjoy being around, like-minded people. You know what I mean? So we all enjoy that, regardless of what politics may be going on within an organization. When you go to a local match, none of that matters. It's all about shooting the match, having a good time, and all of that. But the other part of the social aspect is we're all part of a club. And it doesn't matter if your primary is IDPA or USPSA or IPSC. It doesn't matter because it's all very similar. It's all practical shooting in a way. And the thing that I don't think we mentioned enough of is it's very supportive, not just going to a match. We've all had, you know, someone, we've all had forgotten something or broken something or whatever, and people help you. But it's what you just said too. It's that feedback of you did a really good job and it makes you feel good. And then every time you do that, and the more we say that to each other, the more we try to improve and the better people get. And it's just that proverbial snowball going down the mountain. And I think that's what really drives most people is the support they get from everybody within the practical shooting community. Yeah. I don't think that's mentioned enough.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's really easy to do, you know, when you get excited for other guys on the squad. You know, when you shoot your own runs, like, you know, that didn't exactly fit your visualization, and you know all of these little things that you could have done better and stuff. But the other guys on the squad, they're like, dude, you had like a 12 split in there. That's awesome. And, you know, some idiot yells, yeah, buddy, from the back of the bay. And like, we're all having a good time getting after it. It's one of those where, you know, just pouring energy into other people in the squad and having a great time is repaid to you 2, 3, 8-fold in your ability to, you know, continue to practice and continue to work. I love that part of it. And that it's exactly hand in hand with, like, you know, training as a team in the weight room, coming from competitive sports. It's that same kind of environment, yeah, right? Where
it feeds on itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's like an internal combustion engine. It just keeps feeding.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's not what you would expect, because you're like, hey, everyone at the match is competing against each other, right? And I've talked with a lot of newer shooters that are thinking about going to matches and stuff. And it's like, I don't know, right? That's tough. I don't know all the rules. Like, it's a competition. And man, I can't say enough that, like, all you got to do is you got to show up. You got to get out there. And then you'll realize that everyone out there is having a great time. I want you to beat me, right? I want you to do as well as you possibly can in this match. And I'm going to be more excited for your runs than I am my own, because that kind of, we're all getting better, we're all pushing each other thing. And I think that's a huge part of building a scene, insofar as I can help to build the Michigan shooting scene. It's not going to be with like shooting skill. Nobody cares. It's going to be with the energy that you bring to the range and how much you make people enjoy matches.
Yeah, agree. All right. The other drawer I want to open now is, you said between 2020, so the winter of 2022-2023, you decided to get to buy books and start learning.
Yeah.
So what, number one, what books did you get and start learning from? And two, you mentioned Steve Anderson class. What classes have you taken? So books, yeah, and classes.
Yeah. So thanks to these folks, these instructors, these people that have, you know, helped keep me on the path. And, you know, it's, I'm a, you know, little tiny footnote on their coaching career, but I want to express, you know, thanks, because these people have poured into me as well. First book I purchased was Practical Shooting Training, Ben Steger, Joel Park. And then I just went through, so they have the different levels in there, right? You know, just getting started, to you want to be competitive at a local level, to you want to be, you know, like GM and you want to compete at a regional level, and then you want to be kind of world class. And then they have, so just appealing to my, you know, kind of neuroticism type A stuff, they have a whole chart full of like, hey, if you want to shoot at this level, here's the part times you need to be able to hit. And I'm like, all right, there's my winner, right? So I just went through that whole book cover to cover, read all the stuff, shot all the drills, did it mostly twice a day for the entire winter. And then I rolled out to like my first couple of matches, like, I can do GM part times, and then shot classifiers and did not have the mental aspect of it whatsoever. So didn't really have access to that shooting skill and whatnot. So I'm trying to build that in. But first book, Ben Steger, Joel Park, Practical Shooting Training. And then classes, took class with Tim Herron. Did a really, really good job talking about match management, talking about stage planning, talking about calling shots. You know, really good guy. Met some great people in those classes too. You want to talk about energy at the range. You want to talk about people wanting other people to succeed. Take a competitive shooting training class. And dude, that energy is incredible, because now not only are we all trying to get better, but we're not like actually competing against each other. We're all trying to help each other. Tim Herron was the first class for competitive shooting. Took a Ben Steger class for competitive shooting as well. And then recently, last month, I got to go down to Ohio, take a class with Joey Sireland and Steve Anderson, and learned a lot there as well. I got to meet Joey Sireland. I just happened to squad with him at Area 5 last year. And number one, great looking guy, just a real hunk. But also number two is he's the prototype. He's the absolute, you know, example of really, really high level shooter, really, really high level of skill. He won that area match in his, you know, in his class, or in his division, excuse me. And he won a bunch of the area matches. Guy's getting after it, super successful. But the one thing I can tell you about Joey is that he's bringing huge energy. Every match he's out there, he's getting after it. He didn't know me from, you know, Peter, Paul, anyone else walking down the road. And he was still first person yelling from the back of the bay when I did well, first person throwing high fives and fist bumps and stuff. So that was awesome to get, you know, that example from him. So first opportunity I had to take a class with him, and then especially Steve Anderson too, I jumped on that thing. So I tend to be a little talkative, verbose. You said be ready to talk, and I'm ready to talk.
No, it's awesome. Yeah, I'm not going to stop you either. I'm going to let you go. There's no throttle in this show. So, all right. So I feel like you've taken three completely different classes here.
That's by design.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can't imagine Ben and Steve slash Joey and Tim being very similar. So you're getting skills broken down three different ways. So three different explanations, which is good.
Yeah.
Because I think the more ways you hear things differently, the more it makes sense. So that's a huge plus. Now, did you take Ben's class after you read through the book he and Joel put out?
Yeah. Yeah. So I read all of his books, but I did the practical shooting training one over the summer or over the winter between 22 and 23. And then I took his class, I think it was It was like August of 23 last year. So yeah, there's a decent gap in there for sure.
How much do you think it helped you though, having read his stuff before taking his class?
It did help for sure. I kind of knew what to expect as far as that language. I already kind of spoke the language of confirmation levels,
right?
And those things. And then also, you know, like I had mentioned on YouTube, like Ben and Joel are one of those instructors where they just put full class dumps on YouTube. So I had literally seen 95% of the class. Now they changed a little bit of it because they're iterating and getting better, but I had seen the explanations of the drills and stuff. But the reason why you go to classes is to get hands-on critique of your work in the drills, to get, you know, the feedback, the talking in between drills, the talking at dinner and stuff afterward. It's coloring, you know, outside the lines, right? So that's why they're comfortable putting the whole classes up there. But also that's why there's a huge benefit to actually going to classes, even having already done all the material already via books and videos and those.
I almost feel like if you're going to go to a Steger / Park class, it should almost be or even Wanzik, add him in there, almost be a prerequisite that you watch the class that they give on YouTube first.
Yeah.
Just to prepare you, because it allows you to absorb material easier, especially the critique, the feedback easier when you already know the background. No difference than, you know, Steve Anderson and knowing what he's going to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Steve Anderson was much the same thing, where I listened to, you know, every podcast every week, read all his books and everything. And then you go and sit in class and number one, that guy's entertaining. That guy can talk.
Yeah.
And then number two is, you know, really powerful because he'll, you know, go through your goals. Those guys, it's for you in the class. And a lot of the magic is in between. And then it's also sharing notes with the other people you're in class with. I had the opportunity to go down there with four of the guys from up here, and the whole way there, the whole way back, weeks after, we're sharing notes back and forth. We're talking about our application of the process. So I always encourage people. That's a huge part of the whole, like, fighting off that plateau, right? How long can we stay exponential in growth? Well, seeking out instruction to kind of disabuse you of your bad habits, to you know, knock the ego down, to gas you up, right? So, you know, sometimes instructors are saying, you're doing great. Also, go faster, but you're doing great. really, really helps to stay exponential in your growth, especially early on.
You said that going to dinner afterwards. So of these three different classes, how many of them did you actually go to dinner with after the class, or between days, however it was?
Yeah. Yeah. So, all of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Tim Herron class, first one, there was an Airbnb with, you know, all the people in the class. I was not staying in that Airbnb because I didn't know the people very well. Next time I will stay with you guys. But we, you know, went out, got Mexican food, all of that, hanging out, talking. You know, some of it's about shooting, some of it's about life, some of it's just, you know, banter. But getting to know people and kind of filling in those notes is huge. And then taking the Steger class with friends, went out with friends, talked about the class. And then, you know, the Joey and Steve Anderson class, not only did it, you know, we kind of brought our own group of people to talk about the stuff, but also Joey and Steve and Sam, who owns the range, were gracious enough to take us out to dinner that night, and lots of good conversations, lots of good banter, get to meet a lot of good people. That's one of the other awesome things about practical shooting is, you know, I got people that I would call, you know, close friends in Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan. You know, it's one of those where you meet people that you would never have met otherwise.
I feel like that relaxed atmosphere really allows you to talk about the philosophy of shooting and trying different things. And there's so much banter, not like, how do I want to say it? Just the back and forth of ideas and discussion is priceless.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going off script a little bit. So, you know, obviously great instructors have a curriculum that they're trying to get through. And, right, you know, they got to stay on topic. You got to stay on task. You got to move through the class because you don't want to shortchange people. But in those, you know, spaces in between, it's one of those kind of open book things. So, yeah, number one, I suggest you go to classes. And then number two is I suggest you go to the after party because that's where a lot of the learning happens.
Yeah, don't pregame it. Just do the after party.
Yeah, the after party, yeah. And
right.
To be clear, these after parties aren't, you know, it's not a bacchanalia. We're not getting crazy.
It's, no.
We're out there until like 10 or 10:30 and then everyone's pretty cooked. We go to bed, right? But that, you know, a couple, 2-3 hours, it's huge.
It's kind of like editing something, you know, a 3-page document you've written at the end. You know, that's like the editorial aspect of the day. You're finishing it up, putting the final touches on it. Okay, now we can put it to bed, literally, and get ready for the next day.
Oh, yeah.
I've noticed that Joey and Travis Tomasi have started teaming up on classes. Did you see that?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, that would be, you know, talk about some heavy hitters. Dudes that have been there, done that. That would be an awesome class to get into. I wish they were coming a little closer up here. I think my travel budget's a little tight, but I would love to, you know, take another class with those dudes for sure.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming, but I guess I should have because they're both MPA sponsored shooters, so it makes perfect sense. But for the rest of this year, you've just started back into the, because it's March, so you've just started back into the shooting season for 2024. I'm absolutely sure you're going to CO Nats in June again. Mm-hmm. What are your goals this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So number one, wanted to come out and get that GM monkey off my back. get that thing done with. So I'm glad to go out on the first match and knock that out and be done with that. And glad to shoot all classifiers like they're just regular stages from here on out. That's the biggest benefit of GM that people don't talk about enough is that local matches and stuff, we rock up to a classifier. I'm like, hey, it's just another stage. So from there, it's just taking a show on the road. I did shoot majors last year, obviously, shot the sectional match, shot the area match, Michigan sectional area 5. And then, you know, CO Nats, mostly shot those because they were close and I have family near Cardinal Shooting Center down there in Ohio. So I didn't have to pay for a hotel. Which is amazing.
Nice.
Especially as he starts shooting, right? I can drive there and I didn't have to pay for a hotel. So
yeah,
even though those matches are pretty expensive, they were less expensive for me than, you know, most people. Otherwise I was on the wait list for nationals for a real long time. I actually emailed Jake Martins to cancel. And he said, you're number 4 on the wait list. Are you sure? And I'm like, all right, well, we're close. I have family in the area. Fine, I'll stay in the mix. But this year, it's just doing better at those majors, executing, you know, at a higher level relative to, you know, what I know I can do. I think I got those yips out, those first majors, you know, kind of bugs out last year, and want to do well at a couple of area matches, want to do well at nationals, want to do well definitely at our state sectional match. And I want to, you know, overarching is, yeah, one of the things that Steve asked is, you know, what do you want to get out of shooting? Why are you doing it for? And it's one of those, like, I do want to beat the wheels off of people. We go out to matches, especially, you know, local matches. Like, I want to absolutely crush people, but I want to have so much fun doing it. And I want to be so supportive that instead of, you know, being taken aback by that, instead of being discouraged by that, they're encouraged by that. Right. Long story short is I just want to, you know, be Joey and everything that he does, but, same thing.
Shots fired.
Same thing that Joey did for me at Area 5. Right. Where he, you know, comes out there, he has a great time. He wins the match. He's, you know, getting after it. But I'm inspired by that because you see that, you know, it doesn't take a decade to get good at this stuff. And also you don't have to be super serious and, you know, mean and upset and all that kind of stuff to shoot well. Right? It's have a great time and also be really good. That would be the overarching goal for me. Help to build, you know, the Michigan scene, because competitive shooting in Michigan is good for sure. We have really good MDs, Manny Talks Shooting, really good podcast in the state here. We got really good shooters, but you know, it's not, you know, Arizona or Florida or something like that. I'm not sure if it's ever going to be, but I want to be able to, you know, roll to local matches and, you know, have a bunch of friends there getting better, have a bunch of guys there who can compete, at a really high level and, you know, just kind of build that scene. So, short to long. I want to do well in matches for sure. I want to do well in majors, but I want to be, you know, representative of, you know, somebody who can shoot at a high level and also has a great time and inspires people to get better. And then I want to build the scene in Michigan, or at least help in my, you know, small way there.
You said last nationals, you weren't necessarily able to manage the match as well as you would have liked. Have you done any of the Steve Anderson mental management stuff?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was, you know, half of the class, Joey and Steve. You know, I've been listening to his podcast for a long time. It, you know, putting it into work, it's a process that you have to practice just like anything else. It's a muscle that you got to train. the day I made GM and attained that goal, had nothing else in the back of my head as far as a goal goes. So, I did not do well in that match overall. And then I actually shot an indoor match that night and did not do well in that match at all. So literally up to this point, I'm still getting better at those things. Definitely part of the process, doing the journal, taking the notes, setting, you know, how I want to feel and how I want to act at the matches. That is the big hurdle to be able to, you know, as Steve says, access all that subconscious skill. You can do all the practice in the world, but if you can't lay it down when it matters, it doesn't matter.
So let's talk training.
Sure.
What does your average weekly training look like?
Sure. You know, it changes based on schedule and stuff. I, you know, live a life. I am, as a podcast, as a casual shooter. So I got to structure my shooting competition, my training and stuff around my life. Generally, I try to do quick dry fire stuff in the morning. 15, 20 minutes. That's where I'm going to do most of my kind of stationary gun handling stuff, just because I don't want to, you know, sprint around first thing in the morning. I'm not exactly that spry. Got a little bit of gray in the beard. So morning is going to be more of the gun handling stuff, because it's quick and easy. I don't know about you guys. I don't know about you, Dave, but it's kind of hard for me to get excited about, you know, dry firing, strong hand only, weekend, that kind of stuff. So I just knock it out quick in the morning. I try to train toward competitive shooting, like in the gym. I try to train 3-4 days a week, doing some sprinting stuff, doing some, you know, bodybuilding stuff, because I can't not trying to stay on top of it. And then in the evening is when I do more kind of the match mode dry fire stuff. I'll set up mini stages, all of that. I've seen my social media, I got a pretty slick setup in my garage that, you know, I've invested in miles and miles of PVC. So I got walls and targets and all that kind of stuff, but just making it happen. So a lot of times just batching habits. A lot of times I'll do my morning dry fire. I'll pull my car out. I'll set up whatever the stage is for that evening before I leave for work. And then I go to work, all of that. I come back, you know, sometimes it's pretty late. It's 9:30, 10, stuff like that. I'll come back and what am I going to do? Like, put all that stuff away, pull my car in the garage and go to sleep? No, I'm going to dry fire, right? So try to set up for success to basically close off excuses for myself later on. So in a given week, I try to dry fire between those morning and evening sessions. I probably dry fire 10, 12 times a week. And then I'm trying to work out 3-4 times a week. To be clear, these dry fire sessions are 20, 30 minutes, like tops. I'm not going in there for 4 hours at a time.
Okay. How often do you live fire?
Yeah. So I try to get into it. I try to get to it once a week, at least, now that it's a little bit nicer out. And obviously as you know, bigger matches come up, I said, it's nicer out and I'm looking out, it's just pouring down rain, but, because it's a little bit nicer out, I'll try to get out there maybe a midweeker. So I'll replace one of those morning sessions with, you know, a live fire session, burn rubber, getting out there, you know, shoot a couple hundred rounds and then, you know, get to work. But, a lot of what I try to do is kind of that space repetition. I'm not doing hours of work. I'm doing kind of short, really focused sessions and I'm trying to stack up a bunch of those, because it's more sustainable in my experience, in my extremely limited experience, but it's more sustainable for me. And I think it's more effective, right? Higher quality work in shorter bursts, tends to work, pretty well for me at least.
So how is your training going to change as you approach CO Nats?
Yep. So, right now it's a lot of skill attainment stuff, really pushing speed mode type stuff. When I'm out in live fire, I'm, you know, dropping deltas and mics and stuff. We're pushing, we're trying to get better. And I'm working at the mental management system, trying to make sure that I have that right point of focus. I'm dialed in for every one of those reps. And then, you know, as we get closer to CO Nats, first of all, this is the first time that I've ever actually, you know, like peaked for a major and stuff. Last year I'm like, hey, we'll see how it goes. Right. So I didn't really change my training at all. This year I anticipate I'll probably do a little more live fire. I'll probably do a little more setting goals for myself as far as, you know, match point accuracy goes. I don't remember who said it, but the whole, you know, hey, I got 50 Charlies to work with. We're going to go live fire and I'm going to live fire until I cross 50 Charlies or 15 Deltas or whatever it is. And we're going to try to push the pace and do mini stages and stuff like that. But when you use those 50 Charlies, you're done, right? So just the match mode style of being accountable, really, you know, laying down great runs, but making sure that you got great points too. That's how I would like to train. I do have, you know, kind of a general training cycle built out, but obviously that's a couple months out.
Are you mentally prepared for a drop in the standings? What I mean is you're not that middle A class who's going to win B class this year. Yeah. Now, the expectations are going to be higher of you because you're a GM, but you're a new GM. So the expectations aren't going to be that great, but now you're competing against the top guys. So you're not going to be, I mean, look, you could win nationals, but I've seen a few names on that list and there's a guy coming from across the pond.
Yeah.
That's going to make things very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So are you mentally prepared to see the rankings at the end of nationals and see that you're not at the top of B, you know, you're at the, and I'm just going to use this phrase. I'm not saying anything, but the bottom of G.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't look at it that way. I can't control who shows up to the match. I can't control how other people shoot. I think it's Eric and his son coming over. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
He's
engaging, you know, with USPSA and he's shooting at nationals. And, I would really looking forward to seeing, you know, him and Christian and all those top guys go after it. It's one of those where it seems like the guys with the U next to their name are winning every year. So I don't know if having a G next year, you know.
Well, come on. JJ won it. He had a U, but that's nonsense. Christian won it. He had a U. That's nonsense. They should automatically have gone into that match as a G. So that's crazy.
Hey, classification system is what it is, right? That's sad. I'm not going to complain about it because it went pretty okay last year. So, my whole thing is I just want to control what I can control, right? If I roll out there and I shoot at the level of skill that I know that I have, that would be a win for me. It's one of those, I know that I'll do well. I'm not going to be, you know, 500th out of 500, but as far as the placement goes, I want to look back on the match and say, hey, I got, you know, I got 98% of the skill and I could access 95, 96, 97, 98% of it and put it down stage after stage. That would be a huge win for me. And then we got time. I'm not an old guy. I'm also not a young guy. It's one of those where we got time to build. I would summarize my expectations for nationals or any of those area matches as I expect to get what I deserve. Meaning if I practice really hard, if I get better at it, if I build the skills and if I build my ability to access those skills, I'll do pretty well. If I don't do those things, why would I deserve to do any better than that? Right. It's you get what you deserve. And that's one of the things that I love about this sport, this competition, this hobby, is that there's no glass ceiling. There's no nothing like that. Right. It's for better or for worse. You get what you deserve. So I'm going to make that for better. I'm going to practice hard and I'm going to work really hard on being able to throw that down on every stage. But as far as the placement at the end of the, at the end of the match, I have goals, sure. But the big factor that'll consider the match a success for me is how I felt about how I laid down on the work that I've already done.
All right. Good answer. So you are mentally prepared. That's good.
Well, that's working on it.
Well, how you answer determines, you know, whether or not you don't have any false expectations of yourself. So that's good.
That's true. I expect that I'll do well. And that's about as much as I expect.
And you're accepting of whatever you deserve. So that's perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eric, he should have a G beside his name, but it should stand for goat. Guy's crazy good.
That does make sense. I'm excited to see, I'm sorry, I forget his son's name, but I've heard that that guy can shoot too.
I think it's Robin.
Okay.
I could be wrong there. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's impressive. So I am super excited to see the scores between Christian and Eric. That'll be a fun one.
Yeah, I said I'm not a gun guy, but I'd be lying to you if I wasn't excited about Shadow 2's finally winning nationals. That was the classic, like, you know, Shadow 2's are great, but they've never won nationals. And now it's Christian last year, and I got a sneaking suspicion it might be a Shadow 2 this year.
Yeah, it's very possible. But I don't think it matters what you put in that guy's hand, so.
No. Yeah, he could he'd go out there and throw the bullets at the targets. He'd probably be all right.
Yeah, probably so. Okay, so the climax of your season is CO Nats.
The climax of my season is CO Nats is, you know, one of them for sure. But that's tough because it's in June, you know, and there's still, right. Especially for us in, you know, some of the colder climates, which CO Nats is in Ohio. I'm pretty sure Ohio didn't start matches until maybe February, right? So. For us, you know, up here, it's kind of right in the middle of the season, right? There is kind of that hangover thing where then you got to get up and you still got to shoot some other matches. You know, we got area matches after that. We are state sectionals all the way out in, I think, August this year. So, yes, absolutely. That's probably shooting against the best competition. But do I think that I'll be my best shooter at that point? No. I think that, you know, we're riding this roller coaster and we're trying to get better week over week, month over month.
Well, and that's where I was going was what is the plan for after Nats from your July 1 to October 31st? What are your plans for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I plan to write in my journal. I plan to look at my match tape, figure out opportunities where I could improve. I plan to go to locals with the boys and have a great time. And I plan to basically keep doing the stuff that I'm still doing. I think if you plot, you know, skill development, on a curve, I'm still way down at the bottom of it. So I don't plan to change anything there. I think it's gone okay so far. I plan to continue that work.
Any major matches that you plan on shooting after Nats?
Yeah, I think Area 5 and our Michigan Sectional are both after Nationals, if I'm not mistaken. I know our Michigan Sectional is. I think Area 5 is as well. And our Michigan sectional will be cool too. That's obviously hanging out with the boys. Hopefully some folks from Ohio and Indiana come up and shoot it too. So we got, you know, more folks involved. It's at a local club, 40 minutes down the road. It's a club I practice at. And we've had Jake Walker also in Michigan, just made GM at the end of last season. We got a guy, you know, GM and Carry Optics, Chin Chin, who came out of retirement and is shooting this year as well. It'll be a really interesting match. And I hope to do well with that one too.
Area 5 is about 6 weeks after CO Nats back at Cardinal Shooting Center.
Yep.
And I'm looking for the Michigan, as Manny would say, the Chile Gunworks. There it is. Chile Custom Gunworks. That is a month after. So you have 4 weeks after Nats, you've got the Michigan sectional. And then 2 weeks after that, 2 to 3 weeks, you have Area 5.
Yeah, it'll be a great season. I'm looking forward to, number one, seeing all the folks I don't get to see every month, right? So it's hanging out with those shooters from other states and looking forward to going out there and seeing what I got, competing a little bit longer matches, a little bit tougher stages, and getting that feedback so I can keep practicing and get better.
Well, Skyler, that's what I had. Was there anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to mention?
I think that's about it. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about my journey so far. I hope I did a decent job kind of describing my thoughts there.
You did a great job. Yeah.
And I hope that, you know, I'm not sure how many new shooters listen to this, how many seasoned shooters. I definitely listen every of these episodes. So I hope that I bring, you know, some positivity, not that they're not positive. You know what I mean, Dave. I hope that I bring some some infectious energy for people to start their seasons with, to go out there to gas up the boys, to watch Ronnie Coleman's DVDs on YouTube, to practice a little bit more and, you know, love and enjoy this sport, this hobby.
Yeah, Jay Beal now has a scouting report on you.
That's so. All right, man. That's all right.
All right, Skyler, I appreciate you coming on, and we're going to have to do this again.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.